Hello, hello.
Hi.
And welcome to Xena Made Me Gay. I'm Chris.
And I'm Alice.
Didn't we usually do it the other way around?
In the times of brick phones, Tamagotchis, and curtain bangs, the 90s kids cried out for a badass. She was Xena, the warrior princess. The kicks, the moves, the nostalgia, the queerness. Xena made us gay.
I'm clearly in a very sound state of mind, root focused.
Which is very on brand for this episode, as I was saying.
Yes. But before we get to the episode, let's talk about something that's still related to the episode.
Yes, definitely.
But a little bit of a tangent.
Yeah, so this is the episode where I think for the first time we kind of get a very clear taste of subtext. There is a scene in this episode that could be categorized as spicy, I would say.
Yeah, like, it is, I guess, subtext, but it's so close to the surface. It's, you know, like, epidermic levels of subtext. Like,
yes.
You can smell it under the surface.
And with that in mind, I was gonna ask you, like, what do you think Gabby's and Xena's sex life looks like at this point of the storyline? So, like, starting from this episode or, like, a few episodes ago. Mm. I would say that in this episode, it's clearly established that they are having sex already. But, like, who
right.
started what? When did it happen? When did it start? Mm. What's going on? It's spring. Let's talk about sexy stuff.
Yeah, those are great questions. And I think, so even though we're kind of, we have to do some detective work here and I guess fill in the gaps that have been left by the showrunners just by virtue of them having to keep things as a subtext, I would still be inclined to rely on what we see and the information that we're given as much as possible. So later in this episode, there's, you know, clearly this discussion between Xena and Gabrielle where Xena is this more experienced sapphic and Gabrielle is just trying things out for the first time, and she's kind of nervous, and she doesn't know exactly how to do certain things, but she's very interested and curious. And I would just follow that. I would take that as the first building block to, you know, try to reconstruct what is happening. So yeah, I assume something kind of happened where it became clear that Gabrielle is interested and she wants to experience these new things. But at this point, it's more like, I hate to use that word in the context of women having queer sex for the first time, but experimenting, you know, like, but not in the problematic way.
Just because Gabby doesn't really know what to do yet, right?
Because she doesn't know what to do yet, because, I mean, given that virginity has been such a major topic this season, you know, she hasn't had much in terms of sexual experiences aside from dry humping that dude in the Titans episode.
Oh gosh, yeah.
Yeah, so she doesn't have much experience, let alone queer sexual experience, which is a little bit trickier to figure out because it's just not, you know, talked about. There's no
correct way, quote unquote, to do it.
Exactly. So I think especially for someone who's never had sex of any kind and who doesn't have any kind of access to information about what even the options are, I think it can be a little bit intimidating. And yeah, I would assume there is this kind of let me show you the ropes kind of vibe at this point. That's my interpretation. What's yours?
Okay. I think it's close. I would say that my headcanon is that something started one night before they got a chance to talk about it. I don't know, some scissoring or something. Like just
just some light scissoring, you know. One thing led to another. Next thing you know,
basically
some scissoring happened.
Basically, because in my headcanon, I think that Gabrielle was the one that started it. Because I think that Xena, being a more experienced sapphic, I think Xena would, like, by now she feels something for Gabrielle, and maybe she even recognizes what it is. But she kind of doesn't want to rush things and doesn't want to, I don't know, intimidate Gabrielle with, like, coming on to her.
Or, like, even potentially losing that friendship by, you know, revealing something about her feelings and Gabrielle having gay panic and, you know, rejecting her, which...
which is a possibility at this point, I think, actually.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that Xena was kind of reserved. And Gabrielle also felt all those feelings, but she didn't know exactly what they are and why she's feeling them and everything. So at some point, I think just at night by the campfire, Gabrielle kind of cozied up to Xena and something happened without
them. Okay. So the lesbian version of Brokeback Mountain.
Yes. Maybe not quite
light scissoring instead of some light loop-free anal sex.
Yeah, like not quite as violent, I would want to say. And I think in the morning, Gabrielle was like, oh my god, what was it? And Xena's like, okay, let's talk about it and let me show you. And then we have the let me show you the ropes kind of thing.
Yes. I like that. I think that's very reasonable.
I'm still sticking to my guns that at this point, it's not, like, the word love was not uttered, and it's not
like a
love relationship yet. And we're still kind of getting to the episode that I think is the acknowledgement of this, like, oh, I love you thing. I think it's later on in season two than I thought, but let's see if my timeline is right or not.
In my head. But for now, I'm totally with you in terms of, like, yes, there is something sexual happening already, and they are very close. That's clear. But yeah, maybe it's not yet quite in the I love you territory. All right, I'm glad that we're pretty much on the same page when it comes to this stuff. And with that said, let's move on to discussing the episode, which is episode 19, Altered State. Not altered as in changed, altered as in on the altar, walk someone to the altar. You see what they're doing there. So we open with really happy, triumphant music. Like, it's as if we've already just vanquished the baddie of the episode, and it was like a big baddie, and we're like, ta-da! Woo! You know? but it's literally the first thing that we see, so it's a little bit confusing. But also, if anything, it seems that things aren't great, because the first thing we see after this triumphant musical opening is a house we haven't seen before, and in it there's a mother scrambling to gather some food together for her son Icus, who I'd say is
like 12, 13 years mm-hmm. old, who needs to leave quickly. And she's just gathering some food for him to be able to eat while he's away somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. So clearly not a fun storyline happening there. I think mm-hmm. that the music might be just a hint that we're having another Christianity episode. Da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, this must be Judaism. No, not Christianity. This is clearly New Testament. Sorry, this is clearly
Old Testament.
Mm-hmm. Old Testament.
Mm-hmm.
And if monotheism is still kind of this wacky new thing, that puts us more in, you know, old school Judaism category.
Definitely, yes. I think why I'm calling it a Christianity episode is that because it's this detour that often happens in Xena Warrior Princess, where we're like,
right.
yes, we're in the world where there are ancient Greek gods and they're acting and they're very real, but let's not forget, like, this thing that we're all living in, and we're mm-hmm. gonna sprinkle in some moral rules from the religion that we all have.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying, and then that makes sense. Like, I feel like they're kind of retconning it a little bit with, like, it was always kind of, you know, Christian-ish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I wonder what our resident advisor on religious issues would say about this.
Yeah, yeah, I should ask him.
So the boy is confused about what's happening and why, but the mother says that there's no time for that and urges him to go and just try to find a place to hide. So the boy leaves.
Yeah. I have a bone to pick with the mother character of this episode. She amazes me just as much as Xena's mom at some point. I would be fine with that sort of motherly character in any other episode. It's good when they try to give, like, those passing NPCs that we just see for one episode and that are just a function and not a human being, some character. But here, it's just very funny to me. Like, we know that her son is in grave danger at this point. And she's like, yeah, yeah, you're about to be killed, but, like, first you have to have, like, some yummy food. Yeah, and this yummy food, like, and if you're out of yummy food, just, like, come back and I'll give you more yummy food. Bye now. And she has that southern accent. I don't know. Like, nobody leaves the house without her apple pie sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah, I see that. I think it's slightly less exaggerated as you're making it seem. But it's true that they made the mom kind of this, they made her a bit dumber than they needed to.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so we see the mom and the boy, but then we cut to, as we said, most definitely the boldest subject scene of the series so far.
Mm-hmm.
So here's what we see. The camera slowly pans over Xena's and Gabriel's clothes, just hanging off some bushes, while we hear them giggling, and even Gabriel asking Xena, how's that? And and Xena answering that she seems to be getting the hang of it. And all during that time, we don't see what's happening. So it's impossible to ignore what the scene is actually trying to say at that point. Xena even adds that Gabrielle has been wanting to do this for ages. I'm loving how in the face it is here, and I'm just so excited for even more of that stuff in the upcoming episodes, because I remember that being, like, a very major part of the series, and yet we're on episode 19. Because this is something that I've been really looking forward to, and I remember that being a very major part of the series, obviously, but here we are at episode 19,
And I think that this is the first time we're seeing something quite as bold. Mm-hmm. It took us a while to finally get to this point, and I'm glad we've arrived.
Aw, me too, actually. And that's so interesting to kind of rewatch Xena with new eyes, because I remember, as I already mentioned a couple of times, I think, I remember being so annoyed with that. And
with what exactly?
With subtext, with every scene that had subtext. So like that sort of scene that we're discussing right now, I was super annoyed with that. For some reason in my mind, it was like, if they want to make them lesbian lovers, why just don't they just make them lesbian lovers? Like,
of course.
Why
such
do
an
all
easy
that?
Thing to do.
Yeah. So I guess my 14-year-old self like just couldn't understand it. And also I would say that maybe there was some inner homophobia of little Alice who did not know things about herself yet. But I'm super glad to be rewatching it with fresh eyes. And yeah, I'm also very much looking forward to more subtext.
Yeah. And I think we were kind of coming from two different directions there, where you at that age, you were like, oh, this is so annoying. Like, if they wanted to make them lesbians, they just would have. Mm-hmm. So none of this is real. And I guess that was maybe a couple years later for me. But mm-hmm. I remember that when, maybe I've mentioned that before, but it doesn't matter. I remember when Tattoo, the band, was at the peak of their popularity. All I wanted is for them to say just directly and plainly, yes, we are lesbians.
Mm-hmm.
I think because I was just like, why don't you just say it? Like, I'm into this.
Yeah.
I just want you to state it as plain fact. And I mean, there are people in Russia who have done it their entire careers.
Yeah.
Who are actually queer. But in that case, the reason they weren't saying is because they weren't.
But anyway, it's a cool thing that it started happening. And the other thing that I wanted to say about this scene is that Xena says, just reach under this rock and give it your best shot. And Gabrielle dives under the water and completely disappears, and we focus on Xena's face, and that is a very content face.
Yeah. I don't know, like at this point the metaphor is getting more complicated, and I'm like, what is a rock, and what kind of lesbian sex can you have while like,
underwater?
Yeah. But that's
water like, sex is tricky, as we know from Showgirls.
Oh my god. I mean, I don't think that looked tricky to me. That just looked fucking epic. Water sex is the best thing that can possibly happen to anyone on this planet, according to Showgirls.
I mean, anatomically is tricky. Like, Kyle MacLachlan's dick must be 2 meters long for it to be possible, but why not? If you haven't seen Showgirls, just watch Showgirls. It's the greatest camp masterpiece.
Oh my god, Showgirls is... Yes, a masterpiece is the correct word. Anyway, of course, it is then revealed that what Xena is teaching Gabrielle is to fish with bare hands. Mm-hmm. Like, is that even a thing? Like, can people just like dive into ponds and fish with their bare hands? Like, fishes.
Are fast.
Super fast. Like, they're so quick. They're fucking slippery. Is that possible? I don't know. But it's all shot in this sublime location. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so beautiful. There's a lake. There's a waterfall. Ugh.
Yeah, yeah.
Makes me want to visit New Zealand.
It's one of those stunning locations. But yeah, I guess that's... Xena definitely can do that, and we've seen her do that, I think, so...
Right, and that makes sense. That, look, it all makes sense now.
Okay.
So, you know how Xena and a few other villains have gone to that workshop on catching arrows with their bare hands?
Definitely, yes.
So in order to catch an arrow with your bare hands...
You first have to catch a fish?
You need to be very quick. You need to be super agile. You need to be able to grab things very strongly and quickly. And I think the first day of the workshop was like, okay, we're going to start easy. We're going to practice on catching fish. Once you're comfortable with catching fish, we're going to like graduate up to arrows.
Catching arrows.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And I'm glad that Xena is passing on her knowledge as a Republican Party baddie to Gabrielle, basically fighting the Republican Party with their own skill set.
Yeah, but the Master's tools can never dismantle the Master's house.
Yeah. Well.
Anyway, Xena and Gabrielle's fishing lesson is interrupted when we see Icus, the boy, being chased by some men. And at first it seems like they've passed the spot, but then the boy appears again and he runs directly to the lake because of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So Xena grabs him and gets him to hide underwater. So, and everyone goes underwater at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But then one of the chasers appears and he lingers for a bit too long near the lake, so the boy eventually, you know, runs out of oxygen and emerges from the water because he needs to breathe, and the chaser grabs the boy and yanks him from the lake, with the boy trying to resist but of course failing. It's a grown-ass man trying to get him out of the lake. And then Xena also emerges from the water.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Oh, my God. It's this, you know, cinematic hot lady emerging from the water style shot that I'm sure we've all seen that done. It's shot in slow motion. We see the water stream from her head and shoulders. Yes. And obviously she's naked because we've seen all the clothing that have been removed. I guess we neglected to mention that when we were discussing the lake scene between Xena
and Gabrielle. We did. Like, all of their clothes are hanging on bushes.
Yeah, so. But like nothing is left. we didn't make that as clear as we could have. But yeah, she's completely naked. And so the chaser's jaw is on the floor. The boy's jaw is on the floor. The audience's jaws are on the floor.
No, it's so epic. Also, because when Xena emerges, she growls like a tiger at some point. She's like... That boy is going to have fantasies about Xena for the rest of his life.
If he gets to live it out, which is the intrigue of the episode. So, yeah, basically time stops for a moment, which is convenient for Xena, because she just confidently walks up to the chaser, says, "Didn't your mother teach you it was rude to stare?"
Mm-hmm.
And punches him, knocking him out immediately, of course.
Yeah.
Fucking love it. She then grabs her dress, puts it on, and also grabs a string with some fish attached to it.
Sure.
Why, you might ask? Well, for whatever reason, Xena that day decided that this bundle of fish is going to be her weapon. No, we don't know either.
I mean, yeah, remember I told you that Xena sometimes uses fish as weapons?
I don't.
Well, it's going to be the first episode where she did it, but it's not going to be the last.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Cool. Yeah, why not? Why not? She can do it all.
Yeah.
So Xena fights everyone, and Gabrielle also chimes in, although she sticks to her more traditional staff as a weapon. But then the fight is interrupted by Carl Urban.
Yay!
I completely forgot he had this one random role at first because he was Cupid and Caesar.
Yeah, yeah. And this is actually why I was kind of looking forward to this episode.
Aww.
But yeah, baby Carl, it's super nice to see him there. And I guess this was the first role that kind of impressed the showrunners. And they decided they are just gonna keep giving him random roles, mostly of villains.
Yeah, I mean, he does such a good job in this episode.
Yeah.
He just fucking milks it. It makes sense that the showrunners were like, this boy, let's keep him around.
Yeah, definitely. No, he's a perfect villain here. Really hateable.
Yeah. So Carl Urban, obviously he has a name as a character, but I'm just gonna refer to him as Carl Urban, and no one can stop me. So Carl Urban tells Xena that she should just hand the kid over, but she says that it doesn't seem right. She just flat out refuses to.
Carl Urban is looking at her holding the fish and is like, I don't know who or what you are, but this business is none of yours. And I guess our boy Carl here is not a fan of strong women or any women. I don't know.
Yeah. And that also, I think in the context of the episode having such strong subtext, that also reads as very homophobic.
Yes, definitely. We'll say more things on that.
Yeah. So the gang departs, but Carl Urban tells Xena that this isn't over. Once the chasers are gone, Xena asks the boy what the hell all that was about, and he answers that they wanted to sacrifice him. Specifically that his father wanted to. So yeah, I think when I was rewatching it for this podcast, that's the point at which I remembered what the episode was. So yeah, time to have some good Old Testament fun.
Yeah.
Good old Old Testament fun?
Old. Nice one.
So after the intro, the boy is trying to convince Xena and Gabrielle that his father is actually a great guy.
Apart from some little minor tiny detail, everything's cool. You know?
The boy even says, like, my dad stayed by my bed once when I was sick. Gee, the bar is low here. Wow. We also find out that Carl Urban is the boy's brother. And apparently the family has gotten into this cool new religion that has brought them new farming technology and larger harvests? No, we don't know either.
I mean, yay, farming, harvest, human sacrifice, fun.
I mean, actually, human sacrifice and harvests are linked connected more often than not. Like, it's you don't just sacrifice people because your god tells you to. I think usually it's connected to, you know, you're getting something in return, such as larger harvest, like better weather or whatever.
I might be mistaken here, and I'm going to consult my religious studies doctor consultant, but I think that what was happening in Old Testament is that they were kind of parting ways with the pagan traditions of, like, that had a lot of human sacrifice involved. And when God tells Abraham to sacrifice his son, it's kind of like reverting back to those traditions. So it's not like completely foreign. It's just like, oh, let's let's do it like they did in the old days. And then he's like, no, no, just kidding. Just sacrifice a lamb. That's enough for me.
Interesting.
But I might be mistaken that. I'm going to double check on that and get back to you.
Okay, cool. So Xena finds a cave for the boy to hide in and goes to see his family. And we then see a glimpse of the family dynamic as we witness a conversation between Carl Urban and his dad. Mm-hmm. It's annoying me. Mm-hmm. Carl Urban is very excited about the possibility of spreading his cool new religion with the power of murder. and the dad is not quite so psyched about it. So Xena overhears some of this conversation and makes a dramatic entrance by asking about whether the plan to spread the new cool religion includes killing children. And Carl Urban responds by whipping out his sword, but the dad stops him, but then grabs his head in pain. So the dad is clearly unwell. Mm-hmm. Xena asks the father about why he wants to kill his son, and the man says that he doesn't want to do it, but God has commanded it. And Xena's like, which God? Ares? Zeus? And Carl Urban is already boiling with religious fervor by that point. So he tells her that there's only one true supreme deity. Xena's like, and your cool new god told you to kill your own kid? I thought Ares was cold. Yeah. Anyway, Xena's like, I'm cool with you blessing your spaghetti and shit if that's fun for you, but I draw the line at child murder. So until your god has a change of heart, I'm going to be Icus's badass lesbian mom.
Aww.
And the father's like, okay, I'm going to try to have a chat with God and figure this stuff out.
Yeah, I loved how you summed up the scene. I have almost nothing to add. Just two things. I cannot get over how blue Lucy's eyes are in this scene. Like, piercing blue. It's so beautiful. Aww. I also cannot get over how tiny baby Carl is. Like, I looked it up. He's 23 here.
Cha-cha-cha.
Like, he's still a tiny villain.
Lucy is not much older. She's
a little older, but not much older, yeah. 25, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's so
yeah, it's really cute. Yeah, and like how Carl says non-believer, like with such disdain. I love it. I also love
disdain.
I also love that actually he's so different in all the roles that he gets to play in Xena and Hercules. Like, they're very, very distinctly different.
So back in the village, Carl Urban is flexing his cult leader muscles and telling everyone that Xena is a test sent by the Almighty to test their resolve, and they need to kill her. He then adds that one just needs to look at her to see that she's a dyke. Oh, no. he says unnatural. But again, like, given the context of the episode, given the strong subtextual scene at the beginning, it's almost impossible to interpret this unnatural thing as anything else, especially because he adds then, she's a woman with the strength of 10 men who travels with only her scrawny companion. Like, the dude even calls her an abomination, which, you know, It's a nice touch. It's a very clear reference, I think.
Definitely. And he also calls her a freak of nature at some point, so we do understand what he means and like what kind of reference is that.
Yeah. Yeah, all of this kind of reminds me about the guy who wrote that rant about Xena that we read out before discussing episode 5. The language is remarkably similar. Yeah.
Definitely.
So Carl Urban then says that we must think of the children. Well, the child, the poor innocent Icus, stuck with this freak of nature.
Mm-hmm.
And does it matter if Zeta corrupts the kid a bit before he's sacrificed? Like, let him have some fun while he can.
Aww.
Anyway, the speech works, and all the villagers want to kill Xena.
Yeah. One PSA before we continue. I really love Carl Urban, the actor, and I'm very much sure he's not homophobic, and he doesn't think that badass lesbian women are freaks of nature, but for the sake of us not remembering 1,000 character names, we're going to keep referring to him as Carl Urban. But like, there's zero chance that he's listening. But Carl, if you're listening, we know you're not homophobic. You're the best. I love you.
Aww.
Yeah, I mean, look, if we ever get famous enough for Carl Urban's PR team to like was for defamation, I'd say there would be more cause for celebration.
I'll take that.
Yeah. It's very optimistic of you to be like, we need to cover our tracks.
No, I mean, I actually seriously don't think that we will get in trouble for it. I really love the actor, and I've seen countless interviews with him, and nothing about what he says and does says that he would share the beliefs of his character in this episode.
Yeah, totally fair. So meanwhile, Gabrielle is trying to entertain Icus by telling him increasingly embellished stories about the Trojan War.
Which are not very entertaining, let us just add.
Yeah, and also it doesn't help that the boy is understandably preoccupied with thoughts about his father and this whole sacrifice business.
Yeah. I love how Gabby is super annoyed here that he's not appreciating her storytelling talents. She's like, yeah, you have a problem, kid, but why don't you pay attention to me for a second? You know, I have my art to share.
Yeah. Gabrielle mentions that she's hungry, and the boy just gives her his food because he doesn't want any. And Gabrielle is like, oh, I couldn't possibly. But then the next moment grabs the loaf of nut bread that she's offered.
Yeah, I really love Gabby in this episode. She's very much a comic relief, but I love how she doesn't give a fuck about this kid's problem most of the time. Yeah, she's very happy to have a snack and immediately walks away from Icus and his little crisis.
We then see that Icus's mother is praying to Hestia to protect her son. And she mentions that it's been years since she's prayed to her. So I guess she's been going along with the cool new religion for a bit now. And Xena walks up behind the mother and says, don't worry, Icus is safe. And I bet for a moment the mother thought that it was Hestia herself responding.
Uh-huh.
But she turns around, she sees that it's Xena. They chat, and we find out that some time ago, this new cool god told the father to make Icus the next leader, and not Carl Urban, the elder brother, so the one who would naturally be considered the next leader.
Mm-hmm.
And Xena says that she must go, but the mother wants her to take some more nut bread with her. Yeah.
You see what I mean, right?
I see what you mean. She also mentions that Carl Urban was actually the one who had that bread specially made, and that he's been bringing it to his dad as a treat, and quite regularly.
Mm-hmm. Not suspicious at all.
So Xena wakes her up, but Gabrielle is clearly super high and can barely stand. Gabrielle finally manages to open both eyes, looks at Xena, and is immediately amazed and says, you're so beautiful. I love that.
Yeah, that happens to her a lot, actually.
It does, even when she's sober.
Yeah. I mean, who could blame her? But also, I love the fact that when Xena tries to get her to stand, Gabby's like, so I'm not standing now? She's very funny when she's high in this episode.
Yeah, yeah, it's cute. So Xena tells Gabrielle that there must be some henbane in the bread, so the effects should be temporary. Xena tries to get Gabrielle to remember who Icus is, which works because she can do that, and where Icus is now, which Gabrielle completely fails at.
Aww.
Xena looks around and concludes that there's probably no struggle, and Icus just went to get his mother when he saw Gabrielle passed out. Gabrielle, though, is kind of struggling with object permanence and begins to sob.
Xena gently asks Gabby how much henbane bread did Icus eat, and she answers, sobbing, none! I wanted to share, but it was just too good, and then it was just all gone. Like Icus. It's a very funny scene.
It's very sweet. But then something switches in Gabrielle, and she just wants to go get Icus immediately. But Xena manages to convince her to stay in the cave.
Yeah, when Gabby aims to leave, she says, what are we waiting for? Let's go. All of you, come with me. And Xena grabs her shoulders and says, I'm gonna go get Icus, and you and the others, and Gabby shouts, work on our song? Great idea! Between you and me, the altos are slightly flat. So Gabrielle is clearly having fun with her trip. And just as Xena is about to leave, Gabrielle commands her invisible choir, like, let's start from the top. We've got all day. Hey, you, tenor, get away from the sopranos. Ah, the imaginary realities of an imaginary music theater. I love
Aww.
It. Very recognizable.
Yeah. It's like special for you.
Yeah.
So Icus does indeed go back home and unsurprisingly gets captured almost immediately after arriving, mm-hmm. along with his mother, since she was trying to prevent him from being taken. And Xena rides Argo to save him, and at some point, we see that the road is blocked with giant spikes that are far too tall for Argo to jump over them. So Xena rides up as close as Argo lets her, and then Argo stops quite abruptly, and then Xena uses the extra momentum to somersault over the spikes.
Yeah, that's an epic moment, but meanwhile, in the cave, Gabby is having her own epic moment because her imaginary choir is working on some very, classic,
powerful piece,
and sopranos are actually doing an awesome job.
But we can't hear anything, right? It's just...
We do hear, like, we see Gabrielle standing in front of all the rocks, and on the background, we kind of hear what's in her head, so it's like, oh!
Okay, cool. So Xena arrives, rescues the mother, and finds out from her that Icus was taken to the mountain to be sacrificed. And we see that the father is already up on the mountain at the altar, and he has a fancy sacrificial knife.
Mm-hmm.
Only the best for my kids!
Yeah.
So the zealots are taking Icus up to the altar when Xena catches up with them by following them on top of a small cliff that kind of runs parallel to their path. She distracts them by throwing a rock in the opposite direction, so they look away, and at that moment she lassoes Icus and lifts him up to her little cliff without anyone noticing.
There's nothing she can do.
Of course. And at the same time, we start hearing thunder and lightning strikes. Not seeing them, just hearing what you would expect them to sound like. Even mm-hmm. though it's a sunny day, like there are no clouds. And we see the father praying to his god and asking him to spare Icus. And God actually replies. Like, we hear the reply.
Like a deep voice, yeah.
Yeah. And unfortunately, the god is quite pissed off by this suggestion that the father might deny him what he demanded.
a juicy little child sacrifice. Come on, give.
Is that too much to ask? Like,
oh.
Yeah, but by the way, the father reacts to the voice and the noise. It seems that the Almighty is speaking to him through migraines. Like, he's very ill and you could see that he's in pain every second.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so much so that he passes out for a moment. And Zina and Icus run up to him and help him up and start leading him home. So Zina explains that the father passed out because the strain was too much for him.
Huh?
Which sounds a little bit like one of those fake Victorian explanations, you know?
Like, what do you mean?
Like, I'm thinking of, you know, hysteria and all of those things. Or this idea that women have a limited amount of vital energy in them and they can either spend it, you know, running and being athletic or, you know, giving birth and raising children. So they have to pick one or the other. So it sounds like something from that vein.
Yeah.
So the father asks Zina whether she also heard the voice speaking to him. And she answers, yes. But unlike you, I don't believe everything I hear.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, shots fired.
Right? It's a great comeback.
Oh my god. That is brutal. Meanwhile, Gabrielle is still tripping. And in her tripping, she forgets that Zina told her to stay put. Of course she does. And so she just leaves the cave.
I mean, that's one way of saying it. The other way would be that we can mention that the rocks in the cave told her to go and get the Zina. No, not that rock, this rock. She was talking to this rock, and this rock told her to go and find Zina. So she leaves the cave, still tripping. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah. Zina, I guess, and the father stop for a bit so that the father can rest. And Zina does some acupuncture for him that's supposed to help him breathe. It looks basically like a neck massage. Like, honestly, looks kind of nice. And Zina asks whether the father ever wondered about why his god might ask him to kill his kid. And the father is like, what do you fucking think? Obviously, I wondered. But then he's like, honestly, who cares why? I will still kill my son because that's how strong my faith is. I gotta say, this episode is doing a great job looking at this Old Testament story with irrational eyes in a way that makes you go, yeah, okay, that's just stupid.
Yeah, for sure. And it's not like a parody or anything. Like, at some point, the father says, so I spare my son and teach him what? That faith is only good when it's convenient, and that, like, if something goes wrong, you can just abandon it. What good is to spare his life and rob him of the very thing that makes it worth living? Yikes. Like, it's so scary, but it's very familiar. Like, at some point, I'm sure we've heard a version of that spoken by some very religious person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Zina, Icus, and the father get back to their home. And Zina tells them that the father is being drugged. And everyone makes Pikachu faces at that, of course. So then someone bangs on the door, and it's Gabrielle. Still tripping. Zina scolds her for not staying in the cave, as she was told. But Gabrielle says that a rock told her to come find Zina.
Yeah, it's super funny how Gabby adds, yeah, the rock's voice was a little gravelly, but I got the gist. Gotta love the 90s puns.
Oh my god. So then Icus runs out of the house for no reason. Zina follows him, asks him what's wrong, but he says nothing at first. And then suddenly he's like,
What's wrong is that you won't let me die for my cool new god, you bitch. What? Where did this come from?
I kind of love it, actually. I really disagree that it's out of nowhere. I mean, look, the kid is not a toddler. He's like 12 or something. And he's been 12, 13 years old. And he's been dragged around this whole episode like a MacGuffin. Yeah, but the actor actually did quite a good job showing that there's something brewing inside his head. Like, for some while, he was not like a happy kid. He, you could see that he's thinking of something. And that's a very good example of what the kids actually are when they're accepting this kind of reality presented to them by their parents. And I guess, like, from what we can see, like, for some time, they're already worshiping this cool new god. So he grew up with that, and that's his reality. And I think that's a very good example of this cautionary tale, what happens when kids essentially grow up in cults.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair. So Xena and Icus turn back and return to the house, which is now full of zealots, and where Carl Urban is holding Gabrielle at knife point. Xena is like, okay, fine, fine, fine. What do you want us to do? Carl Urban says that he wants them to cooperate. And literally, the next thing that we see is Xena falling down a ridiculously deep well. Like, cooperating meant jumping into a well? What? Anyway, of course, she manages to grab the rope at some point to stop the fall. And then Gabrielle also jumps into the well, and Xena catches her with one hand while holding the rope with the other hand. I am so jealous of Xena's grip strength. It's just definitely next level. So she then tells Gabrielle to climb up her body, which she does. And we get shots of Gabrielle grabbing Xena's thighs really strongly and generally pressing her whole body against Xena's. It looks very interesting. Gabrielle then wraps her limbs around Xena, and Xena just climbs up the rope with just sheer upper body strength. It's basically lesbian porn.
Aw, yeah, yeah, it's very cool. And also we have some sort of throwback to the beginning of the episode where they sort of try to trick us. Like, we hear one thing and we assume it's one thing and then it's the other, because we hear Xena saying, go ahead, climb up my body, as we see just a general shot of a well. So at some point, I guess they wanted us to think that Xena and Gabby wanted to have sex for one last time before calling it a well. I don't know. That's the only explanation I have.
That's silly, but sure. Yeah. I also felt like they were trying to suggest something, and I'm like, I don't understand what you're doing. I mean, I'm enjoying the ride, but I don't know where you're taking us on that ride.
Yeah, but it's very hot. This episode, I think, yeah, is a turning point where they're like, okay, let's turn the heat up.
Yeah, and also as Xena's climbing up, Gabrielle is also extremely impressed, and she asks Xena how she can end up even doing that. Like, is she in pain? And Xena's like, oh, I'm loving every moment.
Ooh, yes, yes, yes.
Like, clearly straining as she says that, but, you know, Xena, she's just too cool. Meanwhile, Icus is still kind of, to me it looks like he's suddenly super fucking psyched about getting sacrificed. And he basically drags his father up the hill where the altar is. Like, the father is genuinely struggling to keep up with the boy. And at some point the father actually stops and says that he can't do it. And it's too much. And it's too much to ask. So at that point, the rainless thunder resumes. And this time we see how the sausage is made. We see that the person making it happen is none other than Carl Urban, who's just banging at a sheet of metal with some chains attached to it to create those menacing sounds.
Mm-hmm.
The father falls to his knees, so clearly the henbane is still doing its thing, and so it causes him a lot of pain, these sounds. And when he gets up, he just keeps going towards the altar, again encouraged by his son. And Icus then asks what heaven is like. And honestly, if it's anything like the Elysian Fields we've seen, it's boring as fuck and pretty much exactly as good looking as the real world already is.
I mean, but we have to be fair, the real world around them is New Zealand, so it's pretty close to heaven in terms of how pretty it is.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, but it's a very creepy scene where Icus is like, okay, let me get sacrificed, let's go. But the question about the heaven kind of makes it stupid and funny for me again.
It does. It really does.
Because Icus asks, what heaven, like, dad, what do you think heaven is like? And his father replies, I don't know, son. It must be glorious. And it kind of feels like he's going to add, you'll find out soon enough for yourself.
I mean, it is basically that, right? Yeah, but I agree. It did kind of tip it over a little bit into farce. So meanwhile, Xena and Gabrielle finally make it out of the well, and of course there's this added drama of the beam with the rope snapping at the last moment. You know how it always is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We then see that Icus and his father are making the last preparations for the sacrifice, and the way that they're shot, it looks like they're in a Soundgarden music video. Like the camera angle is slightly tilted. There are these oversaturated colors. Like, it's really funny just how much like a music video from the 90s it looks to me.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe.
But anyway, Icus lies down on the altar and Carl Urban starts talking into a DIY megaphone as the one true god to encourage the father to just get on with the killing. Come on, let's do it. And Carl Urban also gets a little bit carried away, and he adds that the father, quote, has always liked Icus more.
There's the reason. Yeah, I also enjoyed this little bit of him slipping up and kind of revealing more about his evil plan that he wanted to. This kind of, I'm in need of therapy, cry for help.
Yeah. So at that point, Xena and Gabrielle reach the spot where Carl Urban has been talking from, and Xena tells him to stop. Carl Urban throws the megaphone into a nearby tree so that they can't reach it. And Gabrielle leaves to try to retrieve it, but he throws it pretty far,
mm-hmm.
and kind of also almost at the edge of the cliff.
Mm-hmm.
So she wants to retrieve it so that she can tell the father to stop. And Xena, meanwhile, is trying to reach Carl Urban, who is close to her, but there is a problem. The problem is, there is what appears to be a bridge between them over some cliff, ravine, whatever.
Cliff in the lake, I think, like a river. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, like a mountainous river. But it's not a bridge. It is the stupidest fucking thing I have ever seen. It's just three ropes. So there are two ropes to hold on to with one hand each and one rope to walk on. Whose idea was to build such a dumb fucking thing? I'm so baffled.
Yeah, so remember in one of the previous episodes, we mentioned that in every sort of Indiana Jones-like adventure movie, there has to be a flimsy bridge that must fall.
Yeah.
So I think this bridge was designed by the architects that supply the treasures of Doom's cave, ancient temples sort of places.
But it's not even a bridge. What is that? What is that? Oh.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was so weirded out. So anyway, Carl Urban just cuts the hand ropes one after the other. So Xena has to just balance on the one that's left with her feet. So essentially tightrope walking.
Mm-hmm.
She's pretty good at it, though. And we've seen Xena tightrope walk before. She knows how to do it. And Carl Urban just kind of watches her do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like he's enjoying what he's seeing. He has this look on his face that suggests that, like, there's some spicy thoughts in there, you know? And that kind of made me think that, you know, the sexual tension that we know Caesar and Xena had was very much something that was, you know, readily available, let's say, for Carl Urban, the actor, to tap in even before the plot demanded it.
Aw, maybe. Like, I've seen an interview where he is kind of reminiscing about his times at the Xena Warrior Princess set, and he speaks very fondly of Lucy Lawless, and he says that, like, how she could be this leader of the crew and not like a main character diva who is like, oh, okay, let's just do my scenes and I'll go back to my trailer, but how she kind of rallied everyone around her. And he kind of tried to do the same for on the set of Boys, to kind of be this supportive main character. So that's really cool. It is cute. And I kind of wonder about that a lot. Like, he obviously got a lot of roles because I even see, like, we know that there is this disposable villain. There is Caesar, there is Cupid, and also he plays a cannibal that is in love with an Amazon at some point in the episode.
Amazing.
Yeah, so I was thinking, like, did they just keep writing to his agent, like, oh, we love Carl Urban so much, can he come back for another role? Or she just kept auditioning? I don't know. Like, there clearly was a love fest between the creators of those two shows and this actor.
For sure. I mean, I think it helps that he's a Kiwi, so he was always around.
yeah.
But for sure, that's not the only reason. I think everyone fell for him, and the feeling was mutual.
yeah, for sure.
Anyway, Carl Urban does finally decide to cut the last rope, but before he can do that, Xena somersaults towards him, knocking him off his feet, and he ends up holding on to the bit of the rope that's left.
He ends up falling, and then, like, to not kind of fall to his death, holding up to the rope, yeah.
Yes, but not, like, fully falling. He's kind of leaning out into the gorge that the bridge goes over, and Xena extends her hand, but Carl Urban is like, no, I just want to die now, lol. Just lets go of the rope and literally falls to his death laughing.
This is so stupid. Like, he really
so dumb.
He really does a very good job playing this character, but the way the character is written is like, it's very Disney. Like, let us just
it's worse
make...
than Disney. Come on. Disney has got some great villains.
No. I mean, definitely Disney had some great villains, but Disney is notorious for A, making the villains die from gravity, because the main characters cannot kill the villains, thus the villains must fall and die, like a lot of Disney villains die like that. And here they're also like, we don't want this character to be at all sympathetic because Carl Urban is doing such a good job, so let him just die and let's sprinkle some maniacal laughter while he falls. At least he died happy.
It is so confusing. Oh my god. Yeah. So Xena then runs to the altar to stop the father. And we see that Gabrielle is still trying to reach the megaphone. Mm-hmm. And at the last moment, as the father is already, you know,
raising his blade above Aikas, Adina throws her chakram, aiming to knock the blade out of the father's hand. But in the end, she doesn't need to, because God starts speaking and tells the father that his faith is enough and he doesn't need to kill his son. And the father's like, oh, awesome! And kill his son.
Yeah, this is a comedic moment because chakram once again acts like a living thing, because Xena does throw the chakram. The chakram is like, oh, my services are no longer needed, so I'm just going to fly by. Coming back to the premise itself, it's basically plays out exactly like in the Old Testament, where God's like, nah, just kidding. At the very last moment where, like, yeah, Abraham is holding a knife above Isaac's chest. So in one of my favorite movies, The Believer, it's one of the early works by Ryan Gosling, but he's brilliant in it. There's this discussion that if you already say, like, okay, just kidding, you don't have to kill anybody, while the person is already holding a knife and about to swing the knife, the person has already killed his kid in his head. So it doesn't matter that now you say, oh, it's all right. Like, both the father and the kid already kind of perceive this event as a real one. So that's still just as cruel, which I think here it's also shown like that.
Interesting. Yeah, it is shown like that, but then they're like, no, never mind. It's all cool now.
Yeah.
Because everything is just completely swell in the family afterwards. The father, the mother, Aikas, they just all together embracing, waving goodbye at Xena and Gabrielle. None of them seem particularly upset that Carl Urban has unalived himself, which, ouch.
Yeah, again with the Disney death and Disney ending.
So Gabrielle and Xena walk away, and Xena is chuckling at this silly little idea, how there can be just one God.
Wow. It is silly, right?
Can you imagine such a thing? shout out to Bendela Krem,
who is
Gabrielle is still feeling the aftermath of the henbane drugging and tells Xena to never allow her to take any drugs again. Xena then compliments Gabrielle on her voice of God, and Gabrielle is like, but I never managed to reach the loud talking thing. Da da da. So the episode ends with both Xena and Gabrielle gazing up to the sky, wondering.
Yeah, it's a very ambiguous message, because, like, after all this, you're still endorsing Christianity? Seriously?
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird, right?
I like this episode also because, like, usually in the Christianity episodes, they're like, oh, like, this one true God is, like, so nice, and, like, heaven and hell, blah, blah, blah. But here it's like, this is a religion that's much more creepy than all of those ancient gods combined.
Yeah, I mean,
which it is, but, like,
and they are still self-aware in the credits, because the fun credits say, no unrelenting or severely punishing deities were harmed during the production of this motion picture. Yeah. All right. So we've got quite a few choices here. For you, what was the gayest moment of the episode?
I mean, obviously, when Gabrielle is conducting a musical theater choir, and musical theater is notoriously gay.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously though, it's very hard to choose. It's such a charged episode.
For sure.
I mean, this, like, since you asked me first, I'm gonna go for the obvious and say the fishing scene.
Yeah. I think I'm gonna go for, I think I've done it before and I'm just, you know, I'm doing it again because nobody can stop me. I'm gonna go for the, oh my god, you're so beautiful. Aww. Moment, because it just, I like how consistent it is, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And I think here it's also like the most explicit. Like before, there were moments where, you know, Gabriel was looking at Princess Diana and was like, oh, she's so beautiful. Mm-hmm, and it's like, I hate to break it to you, Gabriel, but there's someone in the world who looks literally exactly like her. What do you think that means? And also there was one moment when, you know, like Gabriel is knocked out by the serial killer in, mm-hmm. in the Mortal Beloved episode, and she wakes up and sees, you know, and you're like, oh, you're so pretty. But mm-hmm. I think here it's like the strongest so far. And also I can extremely relate.
So aww. That's
I'm gonna true. Go with that one.
Cool.
Okay. And how many chakrams out of 10 would you give this episode?
Yeah. I was struggling with this one because I think in terms of plotline and how I remembered this episode and how simplistic the plot is at times, I would give it a 7. It's a good plot, actually. It's like definitely above average, but definitely not one of my favorites. But now that I've kind of rewatched it and I enjoyed the subtext scenes so much, and there are two of them, I'm gonna give it an 8, I think, just for that.
yeah, I was also gonna give it an 8, actually, because I think, yeah, even though there are some silly moments and not in a intentionally so, I feel like the subtext really like bumps it up a few points, and also I really enjoyed what you were saying in terms of like how you analyzed the like religious cult aspects of the episode. I think I dismissed them a little bit too quickly, but what you were saying made sense, so yeah, I think 8 is very fair.
Cool. So unanimous, this episode is an 8.
Amazing. We haven't disagreed in a while, in a
quite
few
some time.
Weeks. Yeah, so I feel like we're overdue. So maybe that will finally happen next time when we discuss episode 20, Ties That Bind. You can tune in then to find out whether or not we agree. But until then, feel free to follow us on our Instagram at Xena Made Me Gay, where we always appreciate and love it when you tell us what your thoughts about the episode are. And generally, if you, you know, tell us things, we want to hear
please
from
do.
You.
Yes.
Thank you, everyone, for being here.
Thanks.
And we'll
catch you next time.
Yes.
All right. Bye.